From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for week 3 of Rock Month. I've got myself Stuart here, and I've got over in Colorado, got John Grace. Hey John.
Hello.
Alright, but no Hunter this week. He's unable to make it for this time around. He does assure us though that he will be back next week for week 4, the final week of Rock Month, the collective choice that we have now finally worked out who we're doing. But never mind that's next week. This week around though, it is John's choice, and it is who?
It is T-Rex. T-Rex to see. Mark Bolan.
Bolan.
The beginning of glam rock.
You would pretty much say that it is the case. He was the one who started the whole glam rock movement, even though people seem to think it's David Bowie or child fiddler Gary Glitter, which is not the case.
Right.
Why did you choose Mark Bolan and T-Rex?
It was either going to be T-Rex or Mott the Hoodle, and I decided, you know, I haven't listened to T-Rex in a long time, and I wanted an opportunity to give a comprehensive listen, and I watched a documentary on Amazon Prime about Mark Bolan that I found fascinating, because it was all these aspects of his music that I had never realized before, because, you know, previously I just listened to CDs. This is before the internet, so I didn't look him up or whatever. I just read about him in rock books, and yeah, occasionally rented the T-Rex videos and find it cult video stores. And that's all I really knew about him. And my uncle really liked him back when he was active and touring around the U.S. back in the early 70s.
Yep.
And I've always dug the music. I've always had T-Rex CDs since I've been buying CDs and when they were available. So I thought he'd be an interesting choice because he's not talked about much these days. And after the death of Bowie, there was kind of this revisionist history that Bowie created glam rock or something, which just isn't true at all.
No, I don't think even Bowie admits
it
that.
It really started with Mark Bolan.
Yeah, Bowie acknowledges it was also Mark Bolan who was the one who really started that whole British sound of the 70s. Yeah. But, T-Rex has sort of, weaved itself in and out of my life since, probably want to say about the late 80s, I mean, when I started really taking notice of them, probably early 90s, I dare say.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'd heard stuff like Get It On and Hot Love.
20th Century Boy, did you hear that one?
Yeah, that was more later on. That was more one of the more obscure. Yeah, while still a single, it was one of the ones you didn't really hear as much. Yeah, it was more definitely Get It On and Hot Love are the ones that are the big ones. Which, just going off track off his discography for a second there before we launch into it, his singles stuff is pretty much the best stuff he did, I think. So like if you get a Mark Bolan singles collection, well, it's just one fucking slab of rock. Whereas the albums we're going to speak about tonight are kind of a mixed bag, really, apart from one, really, which is a real standout in my opinion.
Yeah. They're a little challenging because there's something with the British music industry. It was more singles oriented. And then when they would do albums, they wouldn't always have their hit singles on the albums like it was mandatory in the U.S. And yeah. I think maybe that's why bands like The Sweet, and even though they're an Aussie act, but probably British marketing people is like AC/DC, like their albums are different in the States than they are in the UK and Australia and other parts of the world. So it's because they want, I think in America, we demand that the hit single be on the album. because people don't, I don't know if British listeners are more into like, okay, I want the album as a separate thing, as a listening experience, and maybe that's the way it was viewed. And some of these albums are concept albums, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And he meant for you to listen to them all the way through.
Yeah. What's your thought on the whole British releases versus American releases of stuff like T-Rex and AC/DC? Which ones do you prefer?
It's funny, I've appreciate the British releases because it's different, so it kind of makes it a new listening experience, even though it's not really new material. But listening to like this, I prefer the British version of Desolation Boulevard, the Sweet album, to American version.
Even for though I do
like the American version, but I think the British / Australian version is superior. It's definitely just it's a better listening experience.
Yeah,
it's a better album. You know, the States, they just wanted singles, you know.
Well, the States were doing that back in the 60s with the Beatles as well, making their own versions of those albums. And those I couldn't listen to. I think they might have even done them with the Stones as well. I'm sure they would have done it somewhere along
the way. Yeah, they did. Actually, the Stones, collecting the Stones discography when I started, when they released those remasters, the Abco remasters, was an absolute nightmare. You know, I would just buy it was insane because they released them out and they were different from what I was used to. And also with the Beatles, when the Beatles put out the remasters a few years back, that was strange because I felt like I was buying all this stuff and I was confused by it. And everybody's like, this is the British version of it, so it's not the same as the American version. And I didn't know those discographies as well because those are bands that in America, if you're young and you weren't around back then, you tend to know them through singles collections or greatest hits packages, you know, because their albums weren't always in print in the States. It's strange. It's weird how that is. Like with T-Rex, I first became aware of T-Rex when the Power Station had a huge hit in America with Bang a Gong. And
Get Along.
And every time you would hear it on the radio, they would mention it was a T-Rex tune. And sometimes you would see the T-Rex video on MTV because of the Power Station having a huge hit. And I like the Power Station version, even though Palmer's singing isn't as good, but the opening drums by the guy from Cheek is excellent. It's like, I think his name's Tony Thompson. He just pounds the hell out of the drums and gives it like a James Bond opening. That's terrific.
Yeah.
But that is probably the only reason Electric Warrior was issued on CD, I think, in the late 80s in America, because I think it's the version I bought. And there was a Born to Boogie box set, and it was basically a two-disc singles collection. And those were the only way to hear T-Rex music in America. Eventually, the old discography was released and imported through, I think, Polygram, one of those companies, remastered on Demon UK or whatever. And I found them in a bargain bin at a Newbury Comics in a Boston suburb, like in 1998 or something. They were $3
Is that the one in
for T-Rex off?
Is that the Newbury Comics in Cambridge?
It wasn't the one in Cambridge where I found these. I found these, I think, in Revere. I think that's the one, if I'm not mistaken. I was stunned. I was like, whoa, these are all the T-Rex albums. This is like Zinc Alloy and Futuristic Dragon and a bunch of unreleased stuff. And Light of Love, I think Bolan's done. And then a few years later, Rhino reissued them in America, and they gave them deluxe packaging and all the additional, you know, demos and liner notes and everything. And it's probably the best way to get them. And then they came out again last year, I think, in Europe, in a box set. And those are the master sets those are the mixes I've provided for us to listen to give it an overlook. But It's interesting that the reissues are kind of sporadic, but they're plentiful. You know, it's strange.
Yeah.
But he's never, because he's not like a top level classic rock act in America. He's never that big in America, except for Electric Warrior and The Slider. None of his albums were big over here, but Get It On was a hit, and apparently I'm told The Slider album was really big. You know, but I think rock as a genre was already shrinking in America at that time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was going to EP. I think it was. Things were going to ELP and progressive rock, and bubblegum rock was still big on AM radio. And yeah, people were into stuff like James Gang and Allman Brothers and stuff, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. So this British guy wearing glitter on his face, I don't know if he was going to be as big around all those guys.
Everyone was listening.
Yeah, Joey Ramone.
Everyone was listening to Styx, man. It's all about Tommy Shaw.
Joey Ramone had said in interviews that when he was a teenager, he would go into record stores in Fort Hills asking for the new T-Rex and Gary Glitter, and he would get laughed at because everybody was into Led Zeppelin, and they were dismissive of glam, like it wasn't macho enough like Led Zeppelin was.
So
that was the kind of the American.
Yeah.
And Joey Ramone was like, well, in England, they were listening to T-Rex and Gary Glitter. They weren't listening to Zeppelin. And because England, I think, was more trend-based. Like, when I was doing some reading for this show, I was surprised how big Mark Bolan was in, like, 71 to 73 in England. He was, for 2 years, he was, like, the biggest thing going.
Yeah.
He was selling, like, the Beatles.
Yeah.
That success wasn't really reflected in the States.
You imagine Joey Ramone walking into the record store going, oh, we got the Mark Ball and the T-Rex. What the fuck's that?
Getting laughed at. And,
yeah, getting the gangly stick insect.
Yeah, get out of here, you praying mantis, you know.
Get out of here, Zorak. Oh, Zorak wasn't around at the time, but yeah, same thing.
Right. Yeah, you know, we worship bands, you know, in the States, like hard rock fans really love MC5 and the Stooges, and nobody was buying those records in the early 70s. They didn't sell. They were in cutout bins.
Well, as you constantly say on the show, everyone seems to think the Ramones were all over the radio in the 70s and 80s when they weren't. No one gave a shit.
They were never played on the radio.
No.
Not even in New York. Nobody listened to them. Not even in Long Island. They just weren't played on the radio. It was just, you had to go see a club, word of mouth act, you know, or catch them on Sha-na-na.
Yeah.
Or Uncle Floyd. But even Bowie, I remember reading that Bowie's records did not sell very well in the States, but his live shows did very well. So he was kind of like Black Oak, Arkansas. It's like everybody wanted to see the live show, but they didn't necessarily buy his records.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into the discography here of Mr. Mark Bolan. And let's just say every other rock month that we've done, well, we've not always covered the discography of the band entirely, except for next week's artist. We've always started at the start, but we're not doing that this week, are we? We're going to jump from not the first album or the second album or the third or even the fourth. We're going to go straight to the sixth one of this artist because T-Rex were known formerly before that as Tyrannosaurus Rex when it was just Mark Bolan and Mickey Finn, which is what a hell of a name that is, Mickey Finn. For a guy who drops acid and
it's a perfect name. Rock and roll.
Yeah, for those of you know what a Mickey Finn is, it's basically hallucinogenic, and that was his real name, Mickey Finn. Don't even know if it was named after him, possibly. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. But yeah,
that
we're going to jump.
Completely awesome.
Yeah. But the thing is, as well, when listening to these albums, it's he's sort of shoved into the background, his contribution to T-Rex, Mickey Finn. I think he was a very important part of it.
Yeah. He was.
It wasn't all just Mark Bolan. I mean, as talented as Bolan is, and nobody can deny that, that guy is a super talent. I will say this. I was listening to one of the albums last night. There were just two words stuck in my mind all of a sudden about Mark Bolan, like encapsulating him, what I think of him, and that is undiscovered potential. Because if you watch some live stuff of Bolan, that guy can rip on the guitar. I mean, Jesus Christ, he's good. Yeah. But he never really unleashed.
Yeah.
He never really unleashed on his albums. He was always sort of reserved, and I don't think Bolan knew where he was going with his sound. And before we had a chance to really, he had a chance to really work out what was going on. He was killed. So we'll never know.
Yeah, it's kind of the side effect of having too many influences from all directions. Because as we go through these albums, I mean, it's his style is all over the place.
He was
really embracing a lot of things. Other rock guys weren't into at the time, although by the 90s he would have been considered a very normal act. You know, when you look at acts like Beck, is kind of doing in the 90s what Mark Bolan was doing in the early 70s, although listeners are ready for it by then.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bit more fused.
Yeah.
And he's all over the goddamn place. He's all over the map. So, Electric Warrior, I listened to the early Tyrannosaurus Rex stuff for the first time ever. Actually, getting ready for this show.
Really?
And the reason I'm not... Yeah, I had never heard much of it. I heard some bootlegs. And I'd heard the John's Children singles on the Nuggets collection for UK Nuggets or Europe Nuggets or whatever it's called. And I actually like those tracks. And the folk stuff, it's not bad. I actually listen to the first T-Rex album is technically the self-titled Mickey Finn and Mark Bolan album, that I just thought it's not really rock and roll. It's not where they were he was going with the band. It's very much singing about elves and Tolkien and that type of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It's interesting. It is interesting to listen to, but it's not something I'm going to replay a lot because it's just so bizarre and very of its time and not what Electric Warrior brought to the table, which was just in a completely different universe. Just a next level thing.
Well, look at the album titles of Tyrannosaurus Rex. Look at the first one. It reads like a fucking War and Peace novel. The album title is "My People Were Fair and Had Sky in Their Hair, But Now They're Content to Wear Stars on Their Brows." That is the title of the album. That is insane.
Yeah, and he had a published book of poetry, I think, as those were coming out. Like, he was a published, like, he had a book of poetry that was apparently one of the biggest selling poem books in the UK. And apparently written some fantasy novels that I don't know if those are ever published. So he was really, even getting into the Electric Warrior stuff and everything, you can tell he's like bringing influences like Michael Moorcock novels and reading comic books and stuff. It's all there.
Yeah.
You know, it's very inspired. He was trying to think psychedelically, but actually it makes his lyrics, sometimes the lyrics are the best thing going because he had a real gift for having that kind of out of this world lyricism that is, for rock and roll, it's usually teenage music. It's stupid. It's just, I want to get this girl in the back of my van, whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
Kiss.
You know, Van Halen type stuff or Kiss. Although David Lee Roth, I think, is more intelligent in lyrics than like Paul Stanley. But it's definitely shows a type of songwriting that's very uncommon in rock music, I guess, except for like heavy metal where you can't even hear the lyrics, but tends to go into this type of stuff. So definitely a different than listening to Bowie or Gary Glitter, which is really dumb rock, you know. I hate admitting I enjoy some of the Gary Glitter albums because he's just such a, you know, complete bastard that deserves his prison sentence.
But, oh yes, he does.
There's no denying the production on those. Yeah, I mean, I give a lot of that credit to the Glitter Band. And in fact, if you get a collection of Glitter Band singles, it's actually better than the Gary Glitter stuff. But yeah. T-Rex really, this style and Bolan really kicked off my interest in glam rock. And I think that's just a great, exciting and fun music scene of the early 70s that I think would really interest listeners that have just aren't aware of it. You know, really fun stuff to listen to.
A lot of people would argue that, say, an album like Ziggy Stardust is the greatest glam rock album of all time, which, I mean, that's a fair call, because it is a damn good album.
Yeah, I love it. It's terrific. But,
it is. Even the live concert, which is tough to watch, because the quality is so bad. It's a good concert to watch. Yeah. But other bands like The Sweet are really, really difficult to pigeonhole, because of all the bands like Bowie, T-Rex, you know, Glitter, and The Sweet were just basically just a metal band. Like I said, if you listen to Sweet Fanny Adams, you'll think this is like the birth of metal. Yet they're still pigeonholed as a glam rock band.
It really is. And they started as a bubblegum rock band, and it's like because T-Rex got big, they got Chapman and Chen to basically set them up as sort of a T-Rex style act, and they kind of came into their own as sort of basically it was glam metal. And I mean, every 80s metal band is completely riffing off The Sweet one way or the other.
Oh, for sure.
And like I've mentioned on the show, a friend of mine who plays guitar says that The Clash, all they did was speed up the riffs from The Sweet on all their records. Like everything is a Sweet riff.
I believe that.
Just played really fast. Yeah, and I believe it too. I don't even have to go listen to those to realize it's probably true. Because The Sweet were just huge. They're the ultimate 70s band because they formed in 1970 and they broke up in 1980. So they're like the perfect, and they covered every aspect of 70s music. Bubblegum, glitter rock, glam disco. Rock, metal, Zeppelin type metal, disco funk, and
yeah, disco know, funk. What was that?
We're doing disco funk around the time.
Yeah, what was that?
Actually a song where it was level-headed, and there was actually a song called "Funk It Up," which sounds like Parliament, funkadelic kind of wannabe stuff.
Yeah, that was off.
And they were doing that on the Sex Pistols for. Yeah, and I have singles collections of The Sweet, like because their discography I have MP3s of a bunch of them, but their discography is kind of all over the place if you're in the States.
Oh, the best one to get of The Sweet
never got a proper reissue.
Yeah, the best one to get is a release that Australia did, actually, on vinyl called the Sweet Singles Collection. It was never released anywhere else but here. And that's a great release, that one. That's their single stuff and the B-sides. And that's as good as an album as you're going to hear from anybody, I reckon.
I have a German collection from Repertoire Records that's the Sweet Single A&B. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's like that'd be the Australian one.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fantastic. It's great. So, even has their great classic that nobody's heard. If You Don't Go Down on Me, Someone Else Will, which I guess was their ode to groupies, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think that was the one that got them trouble in the UK, that song.
I wouldn't doubt it. It's extremely raunchy. But yeah, it's fantastic. We may have to devote a future episode to them, get Hunter into them.
Oh, I got very, very close to doing the Sweet this year, believe me. Real close.
Yeah.
But all right, never mind. Let's get straight into the first of these albums we're going to cover tonight, and that is 1971's Electric Warrior. Yeah, definitely the birth of T-Rex and Mark Bolan as a rock artist, and the track listing for this is Mumbo Sun, Cosmic Dancer, Jeepster, which is a very popular track of his, Monolith, Lean Woman Blues, Get It On, another big track, Planet Queen, Girl, The Motivator, Life's a Gas, and Rip Off. And just a fun fact there for you, John. MTV Mexico voted Life's a Gas as their most popular request of all time.
Really?
Oh, no, sorry. That was My Ass is Full of Gas by Hector Gomez. Sorry, wrong song.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Good. All right.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think Joy Division is going to cover that.
Yeah. No, I don't think so either. No, but what's your thoughts on this one here?
I love it because it's the first T-Rex CD I bought, and I kind of just knew the album from beginning to end. It's funny, and tell me if you've ever done this: is you don't listen to an act for years. Like, I don't think I'd listen to T-Rex in maybe 10 years or so, or 12 years, and right. You'd think, oh, I haven't given this album enough of a spin, and then you put it on, and you like know all the lyrics, and it all clicks back, like you were listening to it every day, you know, 20 years ago.
It's ingrained in your memory.
Exactly, it's totally imprinted there. It's complete positive earworm, and I really like dig the album from beginning to end. What would probably stun people who would buy it because of Get It On is it's actually pretty mellow. It's not like a aggressive album at all. Like
it,
a lot
it
of these
really
tracks
is.
Are extremely
it's very mellow,
but they've got And it doesn't have like a rockin' dance beat all the time. Probably the heaviest song on here might be Rip Off, and it's actually the kind of the clunkiest, but because it just doesn't seem to go anywhere, you know. It seems unfinished, but it's certainly not a bad listen. But I love the tracks in here. I love Mambo Sun. I like Cosmic Dancer. I think Mambo Sun's actually a perfect opener. Just gets you geared up. I love Cosmic Dancer. Jeepster is just really danceable fun. Get It On. It's just one of the great heavy tracks of
it. It really is. Yeah.
And Life's a Gas is really beautiful. Mellow tune, and the Ramones kind of did a fake remake on their final album, Adios Amigos, that wasn't quite close to this, but I could see what Joey Ramone was aiming for. But I think that it's easy to see that why this hit big in the States and why it's pretty much just took off like Beatlemania in England, to where they were calling it T-Rex-tacy, and to a point where Ringo Starr is even directing a Bolan concert film, Born to Boogie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't go wrong with this album.
Yeah, I think it's a solid release. Yeah, I think it's a solid release. Ticks all the boxes. It is mellow, like you said, and for my liking, it's probably just a tad too mellow, but it was Bolan coming into his own, so I'll give him a pass for that, for sure. He was still finding his way in this whole rock thing, considering he did pretty much 5 albums previously with, as folk. You know, cosmic, acid,
right?
Dropping shit, whatever. Yeah. So, I won't be completely harsh on Electric Warrior. I mean, I will say this: the front cover is fucking great. it's a classic front cover.
Yeah, it's a call to arms, if anything. But yeah, I think it's terrific fun, and I think it's a good start. As long as you realize not every track is like Get It On, I think you can have a lot of fun with this record.
Yeah. don't go thinking that it's going to be just like that, because it's not going to be. But, all right, what are you going to grade this one?
Give it an 8.
Give it an 8, okay. It's a fair high whack.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's also a nostalgic favorite.
So. Also, for you, favorite song?
I really like, I really like Jeepster.
Yeah, that was just, my
That's
my
one
favorite.
Of those that I will sing along with as long as nobody's looking or listening. So I will, I just kind of know it too well.
That's a on the highway with no cars around you.
Right, right. Sure. Not at a stoplight where you're always going to stop.
Yeah.
Absolutely cannot, you know.
Anyway, I'll give this one a 6.5 out of 10. Because like I said, it's just a little bit quiet for me, but I still enjoyed the majority of it. Jeepster was my pick as well, for sure. And let's move along to 1972's classic, The Slider.
Yeah.
One of the most iconic front album covers of all time. And a look, I dare say, that a young Saul Hudson, a.k.a. Slash, would have nicked from.
Oh, definitely. Completely.
Yeah.
So much that Guns N' Roses covered Buett McCain on the Spaghetti Incident.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Terribly as well, mind you.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's a terrible, terrible album of covers.
Yeah. Yeah, I never quite got what the Spaghetti Incident title meant until much later on, until years later. I don't think many people have gotten the reference of it. You know what it is?
I can't. I think I used to know, and I just
Spaghetti.
Sort of like a brain with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, just spaghetti. You know, throw it against the wall and see what sticks. Pretty much, that's what it is.
Yeah, well, that totally makes sense for that album.
No, yeah, I think they know it. Yeah, at least they knew it. And, one of the absolute all-time classic rock albums of the 70s, this one. And for the 70s, that's saying something. But, absolute pinnacle of T-Rex's career, in my opinion. My favorite of the lot that we listen to. And getting into the tracks, we've got Metal Guru, as Mark Bolan would say. Mystic Lady, Rock On, The Slider, Baby Boomerang, Spaceball Ricochet, Buick McCain,
yeah.
Telegram Sam, Rabbit Fighter, Baby Strange, Ballrooms of Mars, Chariot Jugal, and Main Man. And, what do you say about this album?
I love it. It was the second T-Rex CD I bought because I think it was the second one you could actually buy in the 90s in America.
Yeah.
And absolutely, from beginning to end, I think this is actually the perfect balance of his mellow stuff and his heavy stuff, and his kind of just really. This is 1972, year of my birth. Just the rock album, just fantastic. I can see why this is his biggest hit in the States as far as album sales go.
Yeah,
and lyrically, he's just off the charts here. He's creating characters like Baby Boomerang and stuff, and you know, maybe he's boozing up while reading Marvel Comics or Michael Moorcock's Jerry Cornelius novels or something, which I think also influenced his stage persona. It's just really amazing stuff. I think this is an excellent album from beginning to end, and I think it's also one you could play to people and they wouldn't think it came from 1972. They think it could be recent. You know, it just has that sound. It's almost a perfect album as any.
Yeah. It doesn't sound dated like a lot of other stuff does from that era, for sure.
Right, right. It's not at all rocks. Like people would be stunned at albums like this in 72, I think, because they're just not very, other than Bowie, they're not aware of it.
Yeah. I will say this, when I listened to this album, I said, my God, there's a band out there who pinch from this album more than anything out there, and that's Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah.
If you listen to Vince Neil's vocal style, it's similar to Mark Boland's. Not as good. Boland can sing. Vince Neil can't sing. The influence of this album on the Crew is all over the place. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
A fusion, I say, of Motley Crue would be T-Rex and Aerosmith, for sure.
Yeah, they think Motley Crue is just Kiss meets Judas Priest meets Aerosmith. Nobody thinks of the T-Rex at
least. No, there's no Judas Priest in Crue's music. Not that I. Yeah, no, I don't believe that one for a second. Yeah. But favorite tracks.
I love Metal Guru. because he's going for like a Phil Spector type sound for glam rock, and it just it works. It's got that total wall of sound, and unfortunately, he tried to duplicate it on later albums, and it just sounds kind of messy. But Metal Guru, I think, is perfect, and I also love Slider quite a bit and Telegram Sam, and not just because of what's the goth band that that covered it. I forget the name, Bauhaus or whatever, they did a cover of it. It's just, you know, it's just, I love the title track, but Metal Guru is probably my favorite. It's the one I've always kind of, as soon as I hear it, I just know it's T-Rex, or I identify, you know, I name one T-Rex song, it's going to be Metal Guru. It's not going to be Get It On.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame this album didn't have stuff like Children of the Revolution on it, or, you know, like I said, we were saying before, songs like that and Solid Gold Easy Action were just singles that sort of got lost and never really saw a release on an album. But until much later when you get compilations or single releases of theirs. But yeah, they were good indications of how good of a rock artist Mark Bolan could be. But I mean, this album is no slouch, don't get me wrong. It's it is a must-own album for sure.
Yes. Yeah, it's essential. I think if you get one album off the show, I think you should get the Slider.
Definitely. Yeah. Get it for the cover alone. But
I'll go ahead and say that right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the cover alone will do it. We'll sell you. But the music inside contained within is definitely going to do it. My favorite tracks are Metal Guru, which I think is pretty much a perfect opener for any album that I've heard. I do like Spaceball Ricochet quite a bit as well. That's one of the more quieter moments on the album. Buick McCain I like a lot, which I renamed Megan McCain. Megan McCain, will you be my girl? Because I got a crush on Megan McCain. Telegram Sam. I mean, there's so many good ones on here. It's just even the last track, Main Man, as well, I enjoyed. So it's just, it's flawless from start to finish. Anything else you want to bring up about this before we move along?
All I can say is, if people ask me, hey, what groups do you like or what bands do you like? I remember back in 94, I would say T-Rex right away. They're going, the Slider! That would be the automatic response. And so it's well known for that. And you cannot go wrong with this album.
No.
It is a absolute. I rate it as a 10, and I don't rate a lot of albums as a 10.
No, you don't. Yeah, okay, so you're going to rate this a 10. I'm going to rate this one an 8.5.
I think it's a definitive glam rock album of the scene. It's definitely up there with Ziggy Stardust. It's fantastic.
It is. It is honestly of essential owns. It is an essential own. You must own this album. It is just an absolute classic.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move along to 1973's album Tanks.
Tanks.
Tanks. Mm-hmm. T A N X. Pronounced. And no, that's not Mark Bolan making fun of the Irish. You go Tanks Fred Abgenes. No, nothing to do with that. But
I didn't even consider that.
So let's move along to the track listing for this, and that is Tenement Lady, Rapids, Mr., Broken Hearted Blues, Shock Rock, Country Honey, Electric Slim and the Factory Hen, which I've got in my notes here, sounds like a Rob Zombie song title, Mad Donna, Born to Boogie, Life is Strange, The Sweetened Babe Shadow, Highway Knees, and Left Hand Luke and the Beggar Boys. Oh, John, this is a massive step down for me from the Slider.
Yeah. Is it because of the kind of funk, soul influence?
This is the album that
really, really starts hitting it.
This is the album that Bolan should have just rocked the fuck straight on ahead and been the monster album, even bigger than what the Slider was. But he dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was because he was getting interested in American soul music again, or maybe he felt like he took it as far in the rock direction with the Slider as he could. But I think this one was, although I think it sold very well, I think it was the beginning of his sales slide in England.
Yeah.
Like they were starting to really, you know, they were getting tired of it. And I think they're fickle in England. I think they're tired of you after 2 years. Just if you look at the record of bands that are huge, like The Darkness was big for a while, and then they were nothing, you know, and then they were the biggest band in England of all time, and then nothing. Yeah. And it happens with a lot of those bands. I think from Blur to Oasis to all those guys, Pulp, just thinking of the last 20 years, nothing's really changed.
A tall poppy syndrome as well. I mean, Australia's guilty of it. You know, they'll just try and cut you down.
Yeah.
As soon as you get big, you know.
Right. And there's a backlash, and I think he suffered from that also because Bowie, you know, this is also the time Bowie was releasing stuff that was more consistent with the style that the Slider really cemented, and Sweet and Arrow and all those groups were just coming out with all these rocking albums, and here he comes with this very influenced by American soul music, and I think it threw everybody off, backing female vocals and some kind of the funky bass lines don't really work their way into this one as much, but as they do in the future, but it's definitely, you can see him going in that direction.
One band comes to mind now who I thought might be influenced by Mark Bolan. Do you think Sparks were at all?
I think so, yeah. Definitely. Because they came out, they were nothing in L.A., and then they go to England, and they're huge. Yeah. Or they did very well, and I think they were very influenced. And I think this album would have more of an influence on Sparks than the previous two.
Yeah. Like, if you listen to songs like This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us, that's Bolan all over it.
Yeah.
And Bowie, for sure.
Yeah, it's total Bolan wannabe, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, without a doubt. And but, I mean, I still like the album. It just, after the Slider, it's a slide.
You know, it really is.
There's no way around it. But no. I didn't, you know, I wasn't gritting my teeth listening to it. It's just because you want something similar to the Slider and you don't get it. You get, he wasn't going to be pinned down and he was going in a different direction. I kind of wonder if that's what inspired Bowie to basically do the same thing. And yeah. Bowie ended up probably confusing his fan base.
Yeah. All right, John, a favorite track off this album and your rating for it, please.
I really like Born to Boogie. I think that's a throwback to his 50s rock and roll influences, particularly Eddie Cochran, who he's a big admirer of after he saw him in the movie The Girl Can't Help It, and Little Richard. I think that track works really well. I also like the tune Shock Rock, which is less than 2 minutes, and I think is a diss at Alice Cooper. I don't know.
Really?
I don't totally know the motivation. I have to go back and read the liner notes. Yeah. Yeah, I think it might, but I think they were pals. Like, they were liked each other, but I think he was making like a little subtle diss at Alice. So it's like, if you have to shock, you don't know how to rock, or if you know how to rock, you don't have to shock. And it's kind of like, it's got a kind of the music is very similar to like Alice Cooper track at the time.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And your rating on this?
I would give it, like a 6.5. I think there's some good tunes on here. There's some other tunes I don't enjoy as much. It's, this is basically what you typically get from a third album from an act that's putting out an album every year, and probably too quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, for myself, I'm going to give this a 5. I was heavily let down by it, but I did like the songs, Born the Boogie, like you said. And I liked Rapids, the second track. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Rapids. That's a good tune. I think Madonna is an interesting tune. Some of them just have a rambling style that's almost like you didn't know where to go with them. Or, you know, I don't know all the stories with, you know, I need to read the liner notes from one of the various editions and, you know, try to figure out what was going on there.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move it along over to 1974's Zinc Alloy and the Hidden Riders of Tomorrow, A Creamed Cage in August. That's a mouthful of a title. Yeah. Okay. What can you tell me about this one?
This was his complete full-blown dive into soul music, funk. He was having an affair and eventually seriously involved with his backup singer, Gloria Jones, who was a Black American singer, and she's singing a lot of the background vocals on these tracks, and also Tanks, and eventually gave birth to a son who he named Roland Bolan, but that's not his legal name. Zinc Alloy was accused by critics of trying to rip off Ziggy Stardust, but he had pointed out that he had written stuff about Zinc Alloy in the late 60s, I think maybe in one of his unpublished fantasy novels or books of poetry or something, that he had talked about this character for a while. If you listen to this, you cannot compare it to the Slider or Electric Warrior because he went in a totally different direction. This is where I think the band members started dropping off too, and he was replacing them, and it's very much Bolin kind of unleashed in something. It's just totally different. It's a lot of funk and a lot of funk soul disco, even though disco wasn't a thing in the U.S. quite yet. I guess it would be black dance music influences. The interesting thing about this when I listened to it is that the track Liquid Gang was completely plagiarized by Prince for Little Red Corvette. And
really?
Most Prince fans don't know this, but I think Prince was a huge T-Rex fan. And if you listen to Liquid Gang, go listen to Little Red Corvette, it's like, oh my God, it's theft. You know, it's like, it's blatant. But I think Prince, if you look at Prince's stage wear and stuff around the Little Red Corvette, there's definitely a T-Rex influence there. Well, and you wouldn't see it coming, but I mean, he liked Rock X that could play guitar. Like, there's a Hendrix influence and stuff, so he may have been one of those guys who was digging T-Rex as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. I mean, yeah, as you said, Prince was a huge guitar fan and also, you know, a solid guitarist himself. Some would say, you know, exceptional guitarist, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he was a Mark Bolan fan at all.
Yeah. And but this kind of proves it. If you listen to Liquid Gang, you will go, oh God, Prince is totally into this guy.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so we'll get to the track listings of this. Let's say the front cover of this is rather odd. Mark Bolan's now sporting a bouffant, sort of fro, the long...
Yeah, he looks like Liz Taylor or something. Like,
no, he really does, yeah.
It's a little...
Yeah.
He's going for the androgyny look pretty big, so...
Yeah, let's just say it does not suit him at all. Anyway, so get to the track listing. We've got Venus Loon, Sound Pit, Explosive Mouth, Galaxy, Change, Nameless Wildness, good one, Stuart, Teenage Dream, Liquid Gang, like you said, John, Car Smile Smith and the Old One, You've Got a Jive to Stay Alive, Spanish Midnight, Interstellar Soul, Painless Persuasion versus the Meat Hawk, Immaculate, which sounds like a WWE fight, The Avengers, Super Bad, and The Leopards Fighting Gardenia and the Mighty Slug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Can't say I like this one at all.
It's just too much into a weird direction for you.
It was just, yeah. If Tanks was the train running off the track, Zinc Alloy is basically the train in the dirt. I will say this, though. I did like the song "The Avengers Superbad" because it did feature Bolan just unleashing on the guitar. I'm like, where has this been? Why has this all been hidden away? But that was about the only real highlight for me on the album was that track. All the rest, I could not get into at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yourself?
Yeah. There are some tracks I don't like "Explosive Mouth." I do think the opening track, Venus Loon, is decent. It's a decent dance tune. It's not great. You could tell it's sort of like the direction an act like Beck would go for much later in the 90s. It would be way more accepted by that time. I do like the tune Liquid Gang just for the absolute Prince plagiarism. I think Teenage Dream is actually a decent tune, but it sounds like a single he would have put out 3 years before. And I don't hate the album. I don't consider it unlistenable at all. I actually like it more than Tanks because at least it knows where it wants to go, and he's more consistent with the soul dance music influence and everything. So I don't think it's a bad album at all. I actually enjoy listening to it enough. The mix is a little harsh on my CD and both mixes, and I don't know if the album would sound like that if you got the vinyl record from the 70s, but good luck finding that. But sometimes I think the CD mixes for this stuff are a little messy and nobody really knows what to do with the stuff. But yeah, I give it like a 7. I actually like it decently enough to give it a 7.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't hate it. And keep in mind, I listen to a lot of funk and soul music from the early 70s. It's a big, that's a genre I get into a lot. And so I don't think it's bad at all. He's probably the first, I don't know if I could really track this, but I think he might be the first white rock act to really try to do a black soul funk album. And that's to be admired, I think. You know, that's not Joe Cocker trying to imitate a bluesman or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing a real dance funk record. And I'm sure his fans hated this at the time. And I think, this was a rejected album quite a bit.
Well, I can see where they're coming from with this. I do not like it at all. Yeah, like I said, I think The Avengers Super Bad was the only track I thought, well, I really liked that a lot. Apart from that, the rest was just... Yeah, you know, I'm sort of speechless in what else I can say about it. I've got nothing left to say. I did not like it at all.
Right.
I think this is the one that I listened to the most where I said, Jesus Christ, this guy's got so much talent, yet just threw it away, just didn't know where the hell he was going.
Yeah.
You know, it was almost like he was trying to dodge that pigeonhole that other bands or artists seem to get, you know, trapped into and decided to keep evolving his sound, but...
Well, he had that talent that unfortunately probably gave him too much optimism to dive into other genres. And I think especially back then, where I really believe music genre appreciation was much more segregated. And I don't mean like in a race way. I mean, like, you couldn't like the Doobie Brothers and like ZZ Top. You know what I mean? It's like you couldn't like both bands. You couldn't like pop music and like rock music. It was way more separated, you know. You couldn't like the Eagles and like the Ramones. And I think when he dove into a completely different genre, and this is the same time the Stones were doing a bad reggae album with Black and Blue, and a lot of these groups were, I think, letting down their fans and jumping into genres that they were into, and that was the trend. And Bolan decides to go with soul music, and I just don't think that worked for his fans at the time. I think it's misunderstood, and it can be a harsh listen, especially if you're comparing it to the other records. But listening to it now, and with my own tastes, which are, you know, I'll have James Brown CD in my car one day, and then I'll have Motorhead in the next. Like, I didn't have a problem with it. I can make that that switch pretty easy. So I didn't dislike it. I don't think it's bad for what it is at all. And more influential, I think, than most people would admit.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How much stock do you put in the fact or the conjecture that Mark Bolan was a practicing Satanist?
Not much at all.
None at all.
I think he was. No, it's funny because I was reading an interview with Michael Moorcock, the author, and he said that Mark Bolan was always following him around in Rolls Royce. Mark couldn't drive. He had to hire a driver to drive him around because, sadly, he was afraid of premature death if he learned how to drive. But he was always harassing Michael Moorcock to work with him because Moorcock had written lyrics for Hawkwind and had also, I think, written for the Bluish Occult, but maybe not around the time Mark was alive. But Michael Moorcock did not want to work with him because he thought Bolan treated his bandmates terribly. And so he just refused to. He thought he was a jerk. So,
right.
You know, I think it's more of he was kind of that manipulative businessman the way Jack White is viewed today or something. Like, you know, and who knows who the good guy or the bad guy is in that situation, because musicians can be flaky and probably not, and they don't make the best bosses or employees. So sometimes they need like a producer to control everything. So not everybody's like what Gene Simmons claims to be, where he's a master businessman and collaborator and stuff. So I don't put anything in a Satanism thing. I think he's just, yeah, he was into science fiction and various music forms and experimenting. But, you know, he's one of the few that you would find admitting to a science fiction influence for the lyrics. So there you go.
Yeah. There's always that thing about, oh, Bolan was killed in a car crash because he decided to break away from Satanism. It's like, oh, yeah. They said
I think his wife or girlfriend was super drunk was the problem, and drove poorly.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get our favorite track and rate this one.
Okay, I'll go. I think Liquid Gang. So there you go.
And your rating?
I'm gonna say 7.
7. Okay.
I think. Yeah. More than Tanks, and I didn't expect to. I expected to. Definitely rate Tanks higher than this, and I was a little surprised. So, but who knows how I'll think when I do this again in 5 years and dig out the T-Rex and go on a listening binge.
All right, well, like I said before, I'm giving it a 4. And, all right, we'll move forward through to and the last album we're going to cover tonight is 1975's Bolan's Zip Gun. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of an attempt at a basically try to come back and regain those glam rock fans. And unfortunately, I think they'd already abandoned him a bit.
Yeah.
And I think he was having a weight issue at the time. Like, he was looking fat. He had gained weight. He'd been drinking too much, eating too much. Unlike others who tend to have weight issues due to drugs, he was quite the indulgent, thinking he had to be Elvis. And apparently, that was the trend. Let's drink 10 bottles of champagne tonight. Yeah. This was it was a definite flop in sales and critics. But he was trying to get those rock fans back, and so there's some more rockin' tunes written to the glam rock style.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it a bit better than I did like Zinc Alloy. But
it's not bad, and Harry Nilsson sings backing vocals.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I think it's as you said, he'd already those birds had flown. They already left his left the nest, his glam rock fans. But I mean it's a decent attempt at a comeback. It's a failed one, mind you.
Yeah.
I remember liking it, you know, to a particular extent.
Yeah, it's a decent.
Okay. Anything else? Any more trivia you got in this one at all?
Light of Love is probably maybe the best known track on here, because there was also a US only release for titled Light of Love, which included this this track and some stuff re-recorded. Some of the Zinc Alloy songs re-recorded by T-Rex and put out by Neil Bogart's Casablanca Records.
So yeah,
it's kind of a weird anomaly in the T-Rex discography. It's a US-only release. And it's a fun listen. If you had not heard Electric Warrior and the Slider, you might think this was something exceptional. It could kind of fool you in that way that comeback records always can, you know. It's not a bad listen.
Right.
And I kind of wish I'd explored it a little more. But, you know, time was compressed because we were trying to slap this one together in like 6 days with our working dad schedule. But no, I don't think it's bad. I think it's going to be fine on your T-Rex shelf. And again, I think it's misunderstood in its time with critics hating on it. And I don't know why. God knows there was worse stuff out back then. You know, I'd rather listen to it than a Kiss record, to tell you the truth.
Your love affair with Kiss continues, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With Gene Simmons being the most hated man on Twitter as of this recording. it's like,
really?
He's copywriting. Yeah, because he's copywriting his hand signal or whatever the hell that.
Oh, that Hawaiian. That's ridiculous. Like, good luck with that one, Gene. Every time someone does it, we're going to pay you? Fuck that. Idiot.
Yeah, he's a complete moron. Very unlikable.
And he's not quite the businessman that people seem to think he is. Just read Paul's book. Read Paul's book. Paul's tell you he's not.
Yeah, it's a worthwhile read simply because it breaks so many myths that Gene has been spreading for years.
Yeah,
it's like.
Yeah.
And so, did you have any favorites on here?
I did like Light of Love, and for some strange reason, I liked Think Zinc. Some reason it stuck out. I was like, oh, it's not a bad track.
Yeah.
But
I like the girl in the Thunderbolt suit because it's like he's going into this weird Marvel comic shit. And by the way, I think he did visit the Marvel comic offices when he was in New York to try to meet Stan Lee and all that.
I actually didn't read out the song titles for this, so what I will do is do that now. And that is Light of Love, Solid Baby, Precious Star, Token of My Love, Space Boss, which is a cool title. If I may say so.
Yeah.
Think Zinc, Till Dawn, Girl in the Thunderbolt Suit, I Really Love You, Babe, GS Original Mark, Golden Belt, and Zip Gun Boogie. And, I give this one a 5.5 I've got written down. Like I said, it's an attempt to come back. It really doesn't get there, but it's much better than Zinc Alloy, which was just the worst of a lot of them.
Yeah, I give it a 6 myself. It's a decent attempt to regain those old fans.
It sure was. And it was the last one, I believe, to feature Mickey Finn on percussion. Yes. He was
after that he assembled Bowie's band for the next two albums, I believe.
Oh, for Diamond Dogs? Was that around there?
I don't know if that was the band, but I know he stole some of Bowie's guys who were session dudes or whatever. I think it was the Diamond Dogs crew.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Yeah. No worries.
It's like, I know that then Bowie lined up with a band was eventually did the Iggy Pop solo records in the mid-70s that Bowie produced, with Tony Visconti, I think, had a hand in those or something around that time.
Oh, nice.
But the last two were just kind of gloss over because, once you buy, like, the slider and Electric Warrior, you list them enough, if they're your thing, you're probably just going to buy every T-Rex album and they're not expensive. They're not like collectively priced. No. You can get them cheap. And, I think, you know, if you fall for the first two albums we started with, I think you're going to get something out of all of these records, you know, regardless of our ratings, you know. Because Mark Bolan had that style. It's really unique. Nobody sounds like him, and a lot of people tried. And Futuristic Dragon was his 11th studio album. It's came out in 1976. Has a heavy fantasy novel influence. You remember Conan comic books were huge. Michael Moorcock novels were big in England, probably big in the U.S. as well. And Sword and Sorcery was like a viable genre. So it's kind of like almost like a bizarro science fiction concept record. I really need to listen to it more and explore it more. It's very strange what was going on in his head. But he had slimmed down, he lost weight, yep. Gotten rid of his chubby appearance, and this is definitely it's a better comeback record than Zip Gun. It sounds pretty good. Jupiter Liar is a cool tune.
Yeah,
this one I'll just give you a quick I'll just say it's a 7, and we're not going to read every track or whatever because we didn't listen to it enough to really give it a deep thing here, but I think it's worth picking up. If you find it cheap, shit, you can find it for $3.99 in some stores. I think it's worth it. There's also some liner notes and some to like a fantasy book or whatever that I want to read. I have to get reading glasses to read stuff like that off of CDs, so that's what's so annoying about it.
Hey, John.
But,
I'm old!
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to age. I've had LASIK surgery, and I'm actually getting to a point where I need reading glasses to read medicine bottles and T-Rex liner notes. So there you go.
All right, we'll push on to the last one. This time was an interesting time for Mark Bolan as well, because it was his last album, Dandy in the Underworld, before his death in September 77, which we come up to 40 years in a few months' time from his death. And also he had the TV show Mark, which ran six episodes.
It's fucking great. If it's put up on YouTube and you can find it, it's pulled down.
They're all there. I watched some of them.
They're all there.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic show.
It really
is. I mean, he had everybody. He had Hawthorne. He had Bowie. He had I think the Damned is on an episode. It's just off the charts great.
He had, and he also gave exposure to Billy Idol with Generation X.
Yes.
On there.
I think the Jam were on there as well. Like I got to go back and watch all of those. And he was in better shape. His stage presence was really, really strong again.
Yeah.
I lost that, but definitely when he's slim, he just moves better on the stage, and he had great stage choreography and everything. And it's what is odd is that TV show ran during the Children's Hour on English television.
Jeez.
Which is hilarious. So it was like an after-school not really after school, I think it was a summer show, but it was in the kids, what's known as the kids' hour, like 4:30 in England or something, and it did well. He was one of those acts that openly embraced punk rock. He didn't run away from it like the others did. He knew there was a future in it, and those bands, he was taking that out on tour with him to open for him, because he really loved him, and Captain Sensible will tell you he picked up guitar because of seeing T-Rex live.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you could watch that Mark Bolan when it's on YouTube, check it out. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Really fun to watch. And Dandy in the Underworld is not a bad album at all. It's almost like he was actually trying to fuse the funk stuff from the Zinc Alloy and his rock stuff in a more presentable package that first fans swallow better. It's a pretty solid comeback record, and it's another one I'd give like a 7 to. It's a fun listen. Yeah, but it's all sad because it's just like, okay, that's it, and then he dies in a car crash. His girlfriend's driving. The sad part, one of the documentaries is they interviewed her about his death, and she said when she woke up in the hospital, they did not tell her Mark had died for like weeks.
Right.
So it's like, it was disturbing. It's really sad, and it's... Yeah, here was a guy who's ready for the comeback, and then his life gets cut short. One of the things he apparently feared the most is dying in a crash. So,
Like Peter Sellers
and
always.
If he were alive, who knows?
Yeah, and like Peter Sellers always fearing dying of a heart attack, and eventually died of a heart attack.
Right. Well, he always had heart and weight issues, and it's not.
Yeah. All right. So before we wrap it up and go, any documentaries out there you can recommend that the listeners get themselves latched onto?
There's at least two on YouTube. There's one that's a BBC documentary narrated by Susie Quattro. There's another one that was produced, I think, for British Television. I think it's called Moving On or something. It's on Amazon Prime. Just search T-Rex documentary and you'll find it. You'll find both of them on YouTube. You'll find a documentary on which is hosted by his son, I should add, Roland Bolin, actually walking around and talking to his old bandmates and stuff. It's pretty good. And also the Ringo Starr directed Born to Boogie, I believe, is still available on DVD, and there was a special edition that's pretty comprehensive. It's not a great concert film. It's not very well filmed and edited. It's still not the eyesore that the Ziggy Stardust documentary is. And it's a pretty good time capsule of that era. And the concert is terrific. The music's great. It's of the, I think it's right before Tank, so I think it's of the Slider era.
Yeah.
And he's doing a lot of stuff with Electric Warrior. It's really good.
I think you and I would both agree. You're gonna get the CDs, start with Electric Warrior and the Slider. And you go on from there, and I don't think you're going to be unhappy with the choices you make after that, regardless of our ratings. So,
yep.
But yeah, definitely watch the documentaries. He's an interesting. He was a very cool visual performer. Like there was a stage presence and stuff you don't see anymore today. You know, because nobody's into a look or stage routine or whatever. It's like it's just not there. Nobody really has the presence anymore. And great guitarist. And I It's like he never really unleashed as a guitarist that he could have been. I think he could have been another, almost a Hendrix or Robin Trower guy. He could
for sure.
You know, run in that mode.
Yeah. We can only ponder now what might have been with Mark Bolan, but we've still got his stuff out there. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up, and we're going to say go visit us at midnightmoviecowboys.com. Go catch us out on iTunes, on Stitcher. Get us on Facebook. We're in Midnight Movie Cowboys there. Yeah, just the various other platforms. Hunter's back next week, of course, for the final week of Rock Month for this year. And I'll imitate Hunter and say adios.
MAGA dog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.